Oh my God.
What is going on, Dylan?
I have a microphone in front of me and I've opened my computer for the first time in 10 months.
This is why. I kind of thought we may not make it back.
Oh, we've done it despite what we thought would happen. So welcome back to On The Cast, everyone. So my name is Dylan and unfortunately the other voice there is Mitch McMaster. So too bad, too sad. You're going to have to put up with him saying every third sentence, but that's all right.
Sounds like a you problem, everyone.
And so episode 31, and well, if you're here by chance listening to us talk and this is the first time, I would get rid of this episode and go back towards somewhere earlier. Might find some good content, but well, we're here today. We thought we'd sort of get back on the train. We're going to try and get some stuff out there whenever we can. Life's busy. Fishing's few and far between, but we get out. More secretly, we're doing fun shit, making stuff happen, chasing good bites. So we're here to talk about it.
That's it. I guess, yeah, over the last 10 months or so, really post-COVID, all we wanted to really do was just spend a lot of time out there actually fishing rather than so much about talking about it as we were doing during COVID. So that's where we have had 10 months off, basically. And that's why we have taken forever, but we're back and we endeavor to be back more often.
Let's do it. So we thought we'd quickly run through some of our like personal fishing. Now, we've both been doing some Hobie rounds here and there, but we'll talk about that probably in the next couple of weeks because there's a lot to talk about. Some pretty fun bites, some cool bites, some good scores, no wins yet, but we'll see.
That's right. Yeah, I think, well said. I think it's something that could be a whole podcast in itself. And I think we would have more time. We could possibly do a couple and back it up. But no point going through it in a small way. We better talk about it in a big way. Possibly get some guests on for it as well for people that have had some slightly better results than us. So we'll see how we go. That's probably going to be recorded next week once Dylan gets back from Woiwoi.
Yes. I've got a big drive in 2 days, but
I was driving with you. It looks like it's going to be a fun event. And as the winner of last year's event, Dill, I think it should be a good event for you. Do you want to run people through that story really quick before we jump into the rest of it all?
Oh, so I think there's like several other podcasts and media things out there that have given me credit for last year's Woiwoi win. So my name is not Darcy Harding. But thank you to all those who gave Dylan Pace the win for Woiwoi 2022. I will take it. If I can have those AOY points for this year, I'd appreciate it. That'd be good.
Oh, yeah. It's a short story, but a good story.
Yeah, so anyway, apparently last year I won 2 rounds. How cool is that?
That's right. Yeah. What are you doing? You should have been on top of AOY points.
So good. So good.
Anyway, not enough about those competitions and back into what we've been up to. So, Dill, what have you been up to fishing-wise, I guess, over the past 10 months?
10 months. Ooh.
Try and go back that far in your memory.
Yeah. So, particularly December, January, a lot of Metro Melbourne brim. Probably, I'll say it, the best I've ever experienced. A lot of fish, a lot of very big fish. Cracked a couple of fish in that 45 sort of mark, give or take a few centimetres. So for Metro Melbourne, that's unbelievable. A lot of kilo and a half sort of fish. But, yeah, standout lure, Callumdale Muss, unbelievable. Very fun. I really feel I sort of, like, mastered that technique in our water, and I'm very keen to sort of put that into play up in New South Wales. See how it goes. Like, if they respond to it in the same way as Black Brim, I think – shit will happen. But in saying that, I'm also worried about the coming donut. Don't want that, but we're not going to talk about that. So, yeah, like that's pretty much all I've done on the brim front. Besides comp fishing, I've done no brim fishing elsewhere, nothing in Gippsland, nothing in Western Victoria. Every time I've been getting away, it's pretty much been offshore. So last 10 months, a little bit of local tuna, quite a bit of Southwest Vic, and also a lot of slow pitch jigging. Like myself, Andy Smith, Aaron Dillon, we really got back into that, having an absolute ball, catching a lot of species. So ticking off things like dory, knife jaw, a lot of big snapper, chasing that elusive Tassie trump, but so far have been really struggling to get it, but caught some bigger Nana guy than I've ever come across, and a really good snapper and having an absolute ball, sort of really sort of just nutting out and diving deeper into that sort of Victorian slopish jigging, which is so underutilized, but a whole heap of fun. That's for sure. And then sort of same time while down there, like fair bit of tuna, like a lot of school fish around, went down to Port McDonald probably about 2 weeks ago, had a shocker, pretty much had too many boats around both days. The second day we were there, stripped a few guides off my PE8 Yamaga within a couple of casts. And then all of a sudden, by the time we'd moved to the next bait ball, tuna everywhere, hooked three fish on PE4 and, yeah, didn't go down too well, all big fish, and I just didn't have the backbone behind me to really smash hooks in. So got to see a few fish over 100 eater popper and didn't stick, but that's okay.
That's all right. There's plenty of people out there that aren't even casting those fish, so did stick one and pop it, or is
If we're talking 10 months back, I think within 10 months I've probably caught a topwater barrel too. I can't remember if we talked about that on the podcast, but I feel like got one boat side before it snapped off, and yeah, happy days. I was going to release it anyway, so in my books, it's caught. Hopefully my spine never has to go through that again, but all well, I've been casting at them again and hooking them, so see how that goes down.
A lot more tuna fishing than I've done in the last 10 months, Dylan.
Or ever.
Going back to what you were saying about the Metro stuff, so obviously most of that was the Maribyrnong, wasn't it? And Paterson, was it Maribyrnong and Paterson Lakes?
Yeah, Pato was honestly woeful this summer, just small fish, just tough, didn't really bother. But I've always found it's a better winter fishery anyway, but pretty much all Nong for me. Yep. Whole length of the river, just bridges, man-made structure, anything that looks good was holding fish.
Now, I think I know some of the reasons why I think the fishing was so good over this period of time for you. Do you want to run through what was different from this year as opposed to the sort of the previous years beforehand? I know there was a pretty large event that happened and kind of changed the system for the better by the sounds of it. So do you want to run through that?
Yeah, well, pretty much we just had an extreme amount of rain over summer, like insane amounts of rain, and that did good things. Like at the end of the day, more water flowing through the system really gives it a good reboot, blasts silt out, brings down new timber, refreshes the whole thing, brings more fish back into the system when those rain events sort of move through. So sort of creates a really, really good boom effect within an ecosystem with more food around for everything. And, well, there's no shortage of nutrients along those Melbourne streets. And when they get all washed in, you get a good boom of microbial life, and that feeds you phytoplankton and zooplankton, and everything eats that. And at the end of the day, bang, you're in for a good summer once it clears up, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting event. So a lot of people might have seen it on the news, the flash flooding that happened along the Maribyrnong River. It was a pretty significant event, caused a lot of damage. I'm sure there's quite a lot of cars and house parts that are now part of the Maribyrnong structure that one day Dylan and I and a few other locals will be catching some fish off. But it was a pretty significant event, and I think that happened early November, I'm pretty sure it was pretty close to Melbourne Cup weekend, because I remember there being some information about the race course there and some of the issues where they protected that from flooding, whereas that probably should have flooded.
Pushed water into houses, but oh well, we're not going to talk about all that.
No, but I remember one day I was training into Melbourne, and I saw the river and I was like, hey, Dylan, have you fished the Nong anytime recently? And it was looking pretty good from the train window. And normally what looks pretty good at that time of the year, fishes pretty well. And I just remember Dylan saying, no, I haven't fished it. And I was like, you better get down there. And I think it was the next day or the day after that you went down there and had that phenomenal session.
Oh, I honestly think I was the first person to hit it post-flood. So I literally fished, everyone knows, in those floating pontoons in front of Edgewater. Didn't even have to move off those, and it was fisher cast for probably about 6 hours, I reckon. Didn't matter, as long as there was a bit of flow on the tide, it was just, I've never had those pontoons fish like that. Then fish off bridges again, it was just, you could not do any wrong as long as you, there's no fussing on what they ate. It was all muss, a few on stick minnows, a few on cranks off edges, but it was unbelievable. And the size of fish was good. Like that day I got a fair few up to that sort of 40 fork fish, but a couple up to like 38 fork. well over a kilo, and then lots of sort of good, like 800-900 grams. It's like, it was awesome. And then the next few weeks, it only improved and the size of fish went up too. So, and by all accounts, like, I ended up having a busy summer with work, didn't really fish it much after January, but seems like it's still fishing well. Like, I saw Dale's been getting a few crackers, a few other people are catching multiple good fish. So it's amazing to see it, just when you have a proper good blowout in a system, how well it ends up being.
Yeah, no, it certainly looked like it was fishing good for you. I went down a couple of days after with one of our friends, Andy, and had some fun down there as well. And I was pretty surprised that even myself, the average brim fish that I am, I managed to stick a couple of fish in that 40-centimeter class, which was pretty nice for me. But yeah, it was pretty cool to see that they were in the hard, fast flowing current. And without the current, it was pretty much dead fishery. So
yeah, no current, no run. Like, so, same for everything in there. But it's like the days you get pumping current, you're even catching perch on muss. Like,
yeah, cool. I caught a couple of those, and I was thinking to myself, there might have been a silly perch, but it seems like there's quite a few perch kicking around there as well.
Yeah, they're getting bigger and bigger. Like, picking up a few okay ones now. Like, the last few years, you sort of watch those size classes come through, and every now and then, just one rando quality fish pops up too.
Yeah, so I caught a few small ones, but it'd be cool to see some bigger fish getting there, and us having to travel less and less distance to chase large perch, because a lot of the perch fishing that we do is absolutely nowhere near where we live, which is a bit of a shame.
Isn't it, Edward? Well, that's probably like the other thing we've been doing, lots of perch bass, branching out, really. It's been good.
It's been a lot of fun, especially varying our techniques as well, which has been a whole bunch of fun. So, for people that know us, Dylan and I like to throw what I would consider fairly sizable lures for our perch and bass, because fishing small things is fine and fun, but it's not as fun as throwing big things on bait cast gear.
No, and so sometimes it's to our detriment, but at the end of the day, it's like when you get a few good bites, and sometimes you catch ridiculous amounts of good bites on fun stuff, and at the end of the day, if you're having fun, you're having fun. It's good.
I think so, and I think from us throwing those larger lures, we probably haven't actually caught too many. I guess we probably haven't caught less fish per se, but I'd say the average class of fish is pretty good. But it doesn't mean that those small fish still aren't eating some of those larger lures. And we're talking about lures up to sort of that 140 mil class. They've sort of been sort of our standout sort of thing. So fishing larger as opposed to what we used to do, which was just mega bass, grand siglets and D-style reserves and those sorts of things, we're really stepping it up in size.
Yeah, it's been good fun, and just experimenting with a few more US tactics. Like, I spent a lot of time this summer just really nailing down swim jigs, and that went from having some good success to being like buying new fleets of rods. Like, it's funny. Trying to fish like standard 6'6" sort of slightly heavier rods with that stuff does not go down well. Like, quickly learnt it's nearly all bait caster gear now. Very little spin gear in our sort of perch bass arsenals. And yeah, just varying rods. Like we've both sort of branched away from fishing the same sort of stuff for our perch bass. Like, I've sort of stick with Miller's, finding like switch freak UL for my jigs has been perfect. Mitch has found the equivalent in Dio going to like, what is it? You're fishing zeros.
Yeah, so I'm fishing zeros as well.
Yeah, Matt, pretty much same thing, just different label at the end of the day. But we just really found like that right taper in the right rod, just you just start fishing through the roof. Your technique just gets so much more refined. You go from missing hits all the time to just sticking nearly everything. Like, just shows sometimes you do have to just move rods on, find new ones to get that right thing for the job. But
that's right. And I certainly think the tackle that you're using, if you're not using the right stuff, you're 100% missing fish. And I think that's pretty evident from the bites that we were getting on swim jigs per se. What we were using compared to what we're using now, we're sticking way more fish. And I think there's no two ways about that. So
the massive learning curve for me was as well, like having a good range of reels. Like I said, like you cannot do this effectively on spin. Does not happen. And even bait cast, I had to end up buying a few new reels, extra high gear. Like, that doubled my hook conversions by a mile. Now, not always, that doesn't matter for like swim bait, top water, hard bodies and cranks and all that, but for swim jig in particular, like if we're going to talk about that for the moment,
Yep.
Can't even tell you how important it is to have that right tapered rod with an extra high ratio reel. Yep, you don't have it, you don't even bother.
Yeah, like I'm fishing at the moment 100 size zillions with 8.5 gear ratios on a 7.22 MLXB TD0, the new ones. And that's virtually the exact same rod nearly as the Miller Switch UL. So same length, virtually pretty much the same. And yeah, without those high gear ratio reels, what you'll see is you'll find a fish, you'll be winding your lure in, it'll pick it up, and then all of a sudden you'll just be out of contact with it. And then you're scrambling like crazy trying to pick that line up with a lower gear ratio reel.
Oh, and it's like you hook a few fish, like you're still going away at the end of the day having fun, but the bites you miss, you're just like, oh, why did I miss 7-8 bites? Like, what's this down to? And like once you start sort of refining it down, like I found, like, well, it wasn't my leader. It wasn't the fact I was using braid over fluoro. For me, it was like the rod first and then the reel second. And all of a sudden you're like, all right, this is making more sense.
Yeah, that's right. I've also found with that braid versus fluoro debate when it comes to these swim jigs, and I think honestly for a lot of these things is I'm just fishing longer leaders through my reels because I'm using all TWS reels now, so all the new Diver TWS stuff, and I find the knots are going through them really, really nicely. You basically don't feel them on the reels. So I might be fishing 3 to 4 rod lengths of fluoro straight off that, and I'm finding I just have that little bit of extra give. And also, if I have a fish rub me through the snags, I've got that extra sort of protection against popping myself off, which I'm finding is pretty nice too. So,
oh, for sure, and it's funny. Like, this is by no means a new technique in Australia. It's sort of just fun us going through that learning curve and developing a skill set. Like watching a lot of the US stuff, watching guys in New South Wales how they fish jigs, but even up in New South Wales, where it's quite a popular technique in a lot of dam bass situations.
Not still swim jigs so much.
So underutilized.
Yeah, not swim jigs so much. I find they're using more traditional style, small, compact jigs, whereas swim jigging, what we're doing with paddle tails on the back of them and sort of using them more as a searching bait.
I haven't more of a seen, swim, like for me, I really use it as a swim bait, something that raises fish.
Yep, and fishing that mid water column more so than fishing those things on the bottom. I don't think we've fished a lot of the places that have had the right structure or bait to imitate to use those traditional style jigs. So that's why I think Dylan and I opted for that swim jig sort of thing for these perch and bass. And I think it's going to translate through to cod and yellows as well, is because we're just not fishing the right structure or bait class to fish those standard sorts of jigs, which I think is something that Dylan and I definitely want to do a lot more of this summer. I just think it's kind of brain fish, especially down here in Victoria,
even just like going back to like that size class in terms of search bait, like being able to like fish ridiculous cover where you just know people aren't bothering to fish because it's been it might be too weedy, there's too much like kabungi overhanging vegetation or just like ridiculously heavy timber, like, and fishing this gear, like you very rarely get busted off. Like I've had one bust off out of I don't know how many hundred fish now. And have put a few low to sort of probable mid 50 perch on the brag mats now, and haven't had a good bass yet, but that'll come.
I have had one good bass, and I missed a good bass, but that wasn't on a swim jig; that was on the surface. But I got one really nice bass that was 49 centimeters on a swim jig. I proceeded to get quite a few more bass before that on the swim jig as well. But it was just really refining that bite and finding that if you had a fish hit that jig. But you sort of have to wait for it to load up and feel a bit of weight in there before you can set those hooks. You'd sort of keep ripping it out of the mouth, especially with that weed guard on there. So it was a bit of an interesting one. And I certainly think finding the right jig and trailer combination I think it's been really challenging. And I think you probably could say the same thing as well, Dylan. It's been super challenging to find the right setup.
What I've sort of found is you've got to find something that's nice and buoyant. Anything Elastec just doesn't hold well. I find when you stick cast, it just rips off. Nothing's holding it without trashing a jig with super glue or other stuff. If you've got any ideas on how to use that, let us know. But you want to find something with a nice, dense plastic, sort of like almost your very, very traditional style plastic, something that's got the right body roll. Like for me, there's pretty much two lures I can't go past. Number one, 4-inch Irukandji Sakara. The first session I ever did that. Yep. Blew my mind. The first fish I caught on one was just over 50 to the tip, and I was like, oh, here we go, this is good. And proceeded to just tower fish up for the rest of the day. Other one, old school, found them at the bottom of my old Jewfish box, and 100 mil squidgy fish. They work a treat for this style of fishing. Just the right density of plastic. They've got a good body roll to them, right size. But at the end of the day, there's a heap of stuff out there. It just takes a little bit of finding, a bit of trial and error. We've certainly gone through shelves of tackle shops buying three or four different packets of different plastics here and there and finding none of them work. It's just part of that trial and error experiment, find what works for you.
Yeah, I certainly think we could do an entire podcast on what we've been doing bass and perch wise, and swim jigs are just scratching the surface of it. But I certainly think, yeah, those 4-inch Sakaros, I think also the cut down 5-inch Sakaros would be really nice if you want that slower presentation with that nice and wide kit. But you also can't use a soft plastic that's too soft. Now, the Elastec stuff's really nice because it's obviously super durable. But what I mean is, but yeah, like Dill said, you have some issues with keeping them on the lure. But you also can't use lures that have too high a salt content. So I think a lot of the Kytex would have been really good, except for they just don't have that rigid quality. You can't keep skip casting them in. They'll just destroy themselves on the cast. So it is a really, it's a fine line between finding the right jig that you like and also that right plastic. And so far for me, it's been the Jackal B Crawl Swimmer and with that 4-inch Sakaro or cut down 5-inch Sakaro from Irukandji.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. Like, I've been running a whole heap of jigs. Like, there's a lot of good ones on the market. And all honesty, every jig I've fished has fished really well. Like, a few have a really good hookup, like the Vexed ones. They're cheap and nasty, but I find they produce really well. I find the hook keeper on them is fantastic in the sense that it's just like your old squidgy ball head hook keeper. It's just a big bit of wire. So for these plastics we're running, they're really good. The skirts on them are mediocre. The weed guard is mediocre, but it's a very light weed guard. Horrible for heavy timber. Fantastic for weed beds. Gets every hit is a hookup. But yeah, you get two in a pack for like $15 from fishing.com. They're good. But like, besides that, honestly, you just pick one out of the box that's the right weight and sort of the right color, and they work with the right trailer. But the trailer's everything, I say.
Yeah, I think the trailer's everything. And to be fair, I think it's a combination of both. But yeah. I certainly think the trailer is the main part. And those Irukandjis have been really good. Jig-wise, though, I think that 1/4 ounce, 3/8 ounce, depending on what depth you sort of want to fish, has probably been the best.
3/8 just all round has sort of just been what I'm going to. And it feels funny when you first get into this style of fishing. You're like, why am I fishing a 3/8 head in a freshwater river that's like 2 meters deep? But then you got to realize, like, you're not fishing grubbing along the bottom. Like, you're cranking. You're fishing it like a swim bait that can go through everything.
Yeah.
And you need that weight. That way you can punch through weed mats, punch through like ribbon weed when you need to, and it's deadly, absolutely deadly.
And I think one of the biggest testaments is we're pulling fish from structures that we have fished in the past that we would never never getting bites off. So
it's been really cool. And that's the thing in terms of like just discovering, like you said, it's like we were fishing things that we've probably fished for nearly 10 years now, thinking A or B, there's no perch or bass here, or this structure does not hold perch or bass in this system. And now it's like, once you've slowing down, you're fishing it properly and a bit more versatile, opposed to throwing just a double clutch or a fish arrow through it, all of a sudden, bang.
Yeah. Whether or not it's upgrading the lure size or something else, I'm not quite sure exactly what it is, but I definitely know for one thing that we'll probably never put cast that deep with anything else other than these sort of swim jigs. So I think that depth of cast and also maybe increasing that size of the lure is definitely helping with attracting a few fish to go and eat those lures.
For sure.
But I guess, for my sort of fishing over the last 10 months, I think Dylan and I have done a couple of trips over to Kuta in that last 10 months before we started fishing the comps.
Absolutely. We did a great Kuta trip, didn't we?
We did one caught with Bowen. The legend himself, Bowen. So if someone's talked about that, and some of the questions we've asked about is when Bowen's going to be on the podcast, our answer is who knows. Hopefully one day when we catch up with Bowen again together, we'll get him on the potty. But
he's not running around in his sea wasp or hunting deer.
Living the good life over
in the magic part of the world.
But yeah, we had a really good trip over there with Bowen. Catching stacks of fish, losing some fish that would have been magical, but that's all part of it. But yeah, I think we had some really good perch fishing actually with him. So he was, we're pretty lucky to have a friend like Bowen who can show us the ropes and show us where he's finding fish and sort of keeping up to date with everything. But yeah, one of the things that, yeah, was the perch fishing. It's just been, it was really good with him. I think he had it better before we got there, but he was sort of showing us how he was doing it. And yeah, it was really good. I lost a tank of a fish, still caught some really nice 48s, I believe.
I think I had 5 48-49s, couldn't crack a 50 out of those zones, but at least they came later in the season.
that's right. I had heartache, had mainline failures, which is new to me, but something I probably should be mindful of, and I've had a number of them with the line that I'm currently using as well, so I might have to switch that out. But it's a really good perch fishing, and then obviously – never go in at East Gippsland, especially period, without having some phenomenal bream fishing. I don't think it's necessarily been as easy as some of our other trips, but no. it was still really good.
And quality of fish was just second to none. Like Malik, like what did we fish? How many systems did we fish that time?
Did we only fish Kudu in the end?
Yeah.
I think we only fished Kudu in the end.
Becca was dog shit.
We caught some fish, but we didn't see too much. It was also closed, so I don't think that helped us at all. But we caught some nice fish out of there, and I certainly think it's a system that I want to visit again. But it's really hard to go past Kudu when you're there.
Like the size of the fish this time at Kudu, like it wasn't numbers. Like you did have to work for them, but it was still that thing. Like you still, it's Kudu. You rock up to a bank, you catch, but it was. Still, like, you had to really nut out the bite and how they wanted things. Like, we had some pretty nasty, nasty weather this time. So that meant particularly the bottom lake was fishing awesome.
Yeah.
A lot of yellowfin, some very big yellowfin. Crank fishing this time was just awesome.
Yeah, it was really good. The day that I left and left Dylan and Bowen fish for the next couple of days, it was very windy, and the flats at Goodwin Sands were fishing amazing. Top water was okay, but it was just so rough that getting that crank and just dredging those cranks along the bottom was just fishing phenomenally well. It took a while to find some fish, but once you found them, it was just, I think we had triple hookups on more than the odd occasion, which was really cool.
Triple hookups on kilo rim left, right, and center. Like, not many places you can do that. Yeah, I've been longing for that ever since, but it'll happen.
But we'll get back there again soon enough. And you never know, you might get that in the weekend.
Hopefully.
If you have that level of fishing, you'd probably be doing pretty well when you get up to Woiwoi. But yeah, it was just phenomenal to see. I think I pulled a 44 down the front while Dylan was getting annihilated by salmon. But Dylan, when I left, proceeded to catch a slightly better fish than me. So I was quietly hoping that I might pip him at the post for that trip.
I got ya.
You did. What did you pull?
46 yellow with a big, like, scoop. One of those big scoop ones, I think, from memory. Cool. Like, with the hunk out of the back. What do they call it? Saddleback syndrome.
Saddleback, or are they the old ex-net fish? The
ones it's caught in the net. And it's like, no.
The Harry Potter fish, the ones that lived that should have died.
Yeah, but that was a good one. That was top lake. We're having this like spasmodic bite on one of my favorite weed beds with just nothing like crazy, crazy big, but just really nice quality fish, just fishing around sort of big balls of garfish, fishing jackal colt minnows, and you just tink them along. The fish were like such assholes. Like, they'd just come up and kiss it, and you'd watch bow waves fly out of the weed, come up and just tap your lure. They wouldn't hook up, and then maybe every 20 casts you get a fish, but it was just a nice. And then that fish jumped on, and I was like straight away. I was like, oh man, I can't wait to see this. And that was probably the biggest fish I hooked for the trip brim wise. And I landed it, and everything went smoothly, and it had awesome character to it. And I was stoked.
It seems like Kudu's been fishing really well. Just not just then, but obviously for the tournament and everything else. But Joshua Richards managed to pull a 50, which is pretty amazing. So
one of the gnarliest fish. Definitely check that one out if you haven't yet. The few photos pumping along of that.
Yeah, find him online. He's doing some pretty cool things. And catching a 50 is pretty amazing. I don't think Bowen's caught one yet, especially out of Kudu. So it's pretty cool to see that they're still around and with any luck increasing in numbers.
Oh, they're there. Just not so silly.
No.
Yes. But that's probably the bulk of our cooler fishing, besides that just being harvesting fillets and whatnot.
I did some cod fishing
through December.
Honestly, if that's what you had to, if that was the measure of your season, I had the worst cod season known to man. The water was high. I was sort of hopeful. But anyone that fishes native fish knows that fluctuating water is not good. You want stable water. And it was not that. It was just a fluctuating mess. So I caught a few fish, lost a few fish, actually donutted on my very first trip with Jamie Rennie. That was shocking. It was a cool trip, but it was just a shocking trip. It was finding cool water. Water was high. We sort of grinded for a couple of days. And, yeah, I donutted. He caught a couple, which was pretty good to see that at least someone was going to stick some fish. I missed some fish, but that wasn't very good. And then I went back up there with Finbar and his mate Tommy, and that was fun. We did some kilometers on the hooves. I destroyed a pair of wading boots halfway through a 20-kilometer point-to-point mission.
Oh, no.
So that wasn't pleasant. I also had the chafe from hell. That was disgusting.
That's the scrotum chafe creek, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, scrotum chafe creek.
Bleeding scrotums and huge hikes.
Chafing your butthole, essentially. It was pretty rough. But the fishing was okay. We caught some fish. I managed a trout cod out of a system that I'd never caught a trout cod out of, which was really cool.
Jealous as of that. Even I haven't got one there.
I don't think many people have.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, which is really cool to see. Didn't see any of the sort of the caliber of fish that we've seen in the past there. But the lure of the trip was, it was Tommy using the 150mm perch palm halyons. In a sort of a pearl white color, he was just smacking me in Finbar. So very cool. Very, very cool.
Always happy to see a cool lure like that.
Up cool people. And I think I might have done one other trip as well. I think I did three for December. And yeah, it was a bit of a write off. But maybe I'll do some more this season, or maybe Dylan and I will just go chase bass at the moment.
Bass.
Yeah, they've got a slight more appeal to me. Cod are by no means dead, but possibly dead for now.
Well, this
is so much like to go to a place like East Gippsland and have that option to go chase bass, and if that's no good, then you can go and chase bream and a few other things as well. Has a bit more of an appeal to me than going to somewhere that might be a bit crap, and that's the only choice you sort of have is around where you are. So having options isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Options is good. That's what we like. Yeah. Variety is the spice of life, I think, as we've grown to sort of love with our fishing.
Absolutely. And I guess in that variety sort of sense of things as well, I've been doing something that I guess I don't normally do, which is a lot more trout fishing. I think trout are a cool fish. I think they're an interesting fish in Australia. And I'll just leave it at that. But I've been trying to target some bigger fish, especially around our lakes in the west of Victoria, on some larger lures. Thus far, lots of misses and encounters, but it's been really cool to throw those bigger baits that you sort of would be more so throwing at perch, bass, and maybe some small cod, and having some cool interactions, which has been really nice. And it's pretty close to home. Like nearly everywhere you'd want to go is an hour drive or a bit over an hour drive from where I am down in Geelong. So it's been cool. Nothing to show for it yet. I saw a few people been whacking some big fish down in the southwest. But yeah, nothing for me, nothing huge yet. A really nice sort of that 4-pound tiger trout I caught out of Parambit last week. And to be fair, if you're ever going to catch a fish that you want to take home for a feed, the old tiger trout are flipping delicious.
Are they good? Good.
Very, very, very good. And the flesh
I've heard mixed opinions. It's like I've tried eating chinooks and.
I have heard though, chinooks out of Boolamerri are not worth eating. Chinooks out of Parambit are.
See, I haven't eaten one from. I don't even think I caught one in Parambit, but Boolamerri, I tried to make those things edible so many times. It was like you couldn't even put them in a pasta. They were just vile.
Were they orange flesh or were they?
Yeah, like they looked awesome. They're like, right. You knock the fillets off and it looks like the salmon you'd buy from the shop nearly, but like, no, inedible. Yeah. But you catch a brown or a rainbow out of that joint and it's just 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Oh, like,
the rainbows out of there are like the nicest salmon you could ever eat in your life.
I've also heard that the tigers down there are in a pretty tasty form as well. So that's something I think that Dylan and I have been sort of interested in going.
Yeah.
Land bash and bull in their eye.
Always love it. Place land based. It's awesome.
And taking our esky full of fillets because at the end of the day, everything costs too much and trout don't taste so bad. So, but yeah, trying to get some big glide baits or bigger sort of style lures. We'll get there eventually. I think it's certainly maybe a nighttime thing.
But yeah, keen to experiment. Like I've hooked, because I haven't like targeted trout on glides yet personally, but I've had a couple now that I've sight casted fishing for perch in a couple of the rivers we like to hit. And it's like you'll see a big brown mooch along the bank, punch a slide swimmer in front of it, and they eat it 10 times out of 10. But just so far I've found the hookup isn't great. And then if you hook them and they jump, generally it's like when they've got 20 to 50 grams hanging out of their mouth, you just watch them do one head shake and throw it. But that could be a hook-related thing too. You might just need to vary that up.
Yeah. I've had a number of hits now on the slides from the 115s and 145s, and I went fishing with Jamie Rennie as well down there, and he had some hits on the 5-inch Sicarios. So they're eating some larger things, but, yeah, that hookup rate is just – it's pretty poor.
Slay 5-inch Sicarios.
Yeah.
But yeah, the hookup's not good, but they eat. We had a session with like Finbar and Andy, and like Andy was just like determined to get one on a Sicario. And he was getting more hits than we were on like 3- and 4-inch Berkeley bass minnows.
Yeah.
Like they just, and again, it just sort of shows the draw power of those big baits. Now, they have the draw power. Doesn't mean they always get eaten. No, but do they always get attention? Do you get follows? Do you get hits and taps and hookups? Oh, God, yeah, you do.
Yeah, that's right. I think those bigger baits certainly drew a fair bit of attention. Having said that, though, in all honesty, bent minnows. Bent minnows have been the lure to draw fish in, and I honestly think some of the fish that I've seen behind those lures and or boil and or hit them have been significantly bigger than nearly on anything else. I know that I had some good hits on the 145s and the 115 slide swimmers, but I just think some of the fish that are coming up to bents, I don't know if there's a fish that would generally eat a bent that wouldn't continue to eat bents for the rest of their lives. I just think they're the best lure that's ever been and possibly ever will be for nearly anything. So, yeah, I think, honestly, just if you go down there with a handful of those, you'll be right. But what I did find was the new double clutch shallows, so the 75 SR double clutches were phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. The ability to cast a mile, especially if you're drifting with the wind, cast a mile, fish them fast. I was catching fish on them in 6 meters of water. They were just coming out of nowhere and eating them. So they were a really good lure, but I did find color was pretty, you had to fish the right color. So the Adele AU.
they got that double clutch color range is like,
yeah,
smick.
Yeah, it's very good. But that Adele AU was really, really, really good down there. So I think that's something that if you're heading down to those crater lakes or I guess a lot of those shallower lakes that you're fishing for trout that have a lot of minnow in them.
Even like the rivers down there, like if you're hitting the Merai, if you're hitting the Hopkins, even the Otway streams, like if you're going to the air, the Jelly Brand, all of them.
Yep.
That's something you probably want to take along.
They're just a phenomenal lure. Trout wise, I think they're going to be awesome as well. We just need to fish them in the right scenarios. But in terms of trout catches, they are just. Did I say trout or bream before?
You're talking about trout.
I know, but before, just before I meant like bream wise, they'll be awesome. But we just need some more trial and error for them. But trout wise, I think as long as you're fishing them in that pretty clear water, they're going to absolutely continue to mess fish up. Their fish are pretty nice sized hooks, so you're not dropping too many fish. And the casting distance and the speed, I really like fishing for my trout real quick, especially in lakes and clear waters. I just like to fish them really, really fast, get the reaction bite, and it's been working really well for me. So those double cut shallows, get them in your box.
Oh, and it's been, it's kind of unfortunate. They came out of the tail end of summer. Therefore, like in terms of for our Brim in particular, just in the wrong time of year for them. Like jerkbait wise, like say for the last Bem round Aussies and a lot of say OSP Doogers that just get a bit deeper. But I'm so looking forward to say those double clutches of plate, like all through East Gippsland, even Western Victoria. There's just going to be so many options for them. But like we could talk about new lures all day, but I think that could be a whole new episode. Okay. We've been running a lot of new shit, a lot of fun new stuff's out, and things are getting a bit different in our market now. There's a lot of wacky, wonderful things really coming in that we're all about. I was going to say, we've had a bucket load of listener questions. Like, we just had a great one coming since we're talking about lures. Screenshotted this one. I don't think you've read it. I opened it.
No.
So Dave Eccleston, all the way back in time in Western Australia. Per annum, how many lures does Mitch buy and unbox with the intent of using them, but then never uses them and sells them for half the price of what he paid for?
Probably a lot. I think a lot. I buy a lot of things. Most of them I use, or most of them I buy at least with the intention of using, and a lot, I'd say I probably don't sell.
The intention of using, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not many things that I buy and sell, to be honest. The things that I buy and sell are things that I don't think resonate necessarily with me so much, or I just find over the years I'm going to pick up something else more than I'm going to use those and have a lot more confidence in something else, whereas I'm going to pass those on. The ones that I don't have confidence in, I'm definitely passing those on to other people that may have that confidence in those lures. But realistically, I'm buying a shitload of gear. A huge amount of gear. And honestly, I'm just kind of preparing for that time where I just don't need to buy too much stuff. And
never happens, never comes around. We won't.
Nah. Well, rod-wise and reel-wise, I'm about to go buy a whole lot more stuff. Mr. David Eccleston. So stay tuned on the social medias and you'll see what I'm about to buy.
Mitch's gallery sale is about to get even better again.
There's some things that I've put up for sale that haven't sold that I don't think will. But for those people that know me, what I am doing is going to set myself up with a pretty new Schmicko kayak rig for the 2024 Brim tournament side of things. So that's why I'm selling some stuff that I may not be using so much, or that I think other people are going to get more use out of than me. Good question, Dave. Come back to Victoria.
You find one next. What have we got?
All right. So what have we got next? Well, there's definitely some good questions in there. I sent a lot of these over to Dill. One I have is from Ben, so fishing_light on Instagram. He says, as we edge closer to winter, what are some techniques/lures in brackets, new and old brackets, rods, lines, and leaders that you'll be throwing to target those big spawning winter brims? There's a lot in that question, Dylan. Firstly, probably for me, probably not going to be targeting too many winter brims. I just don't know if I'm going to have the time, and I possibly am going to Finland this year again. So time and money may not be on my side, so I might not be doing a whole lot. But Dylan probably will do some. So, Dylan, maybe. What are you throwing?
I hate winter brim fishing this day and age. I just don't find it, the techniques associated with it, fun as such. Certainly get out there and do a bit. Rod, reel, leader, nothing very, just all my usual millers.
I suspect you'd need two. A blade freak and a grub freak.
Yeah, that's 99.9% of the rods I'd run for, like, my winter stuff. And then
maybe twitch with a dunk or something on it.
Yeah. Usual reels, like, no, I don't think that has an effect on the winter brims as such, but just for me, cetaceans, revelries, that's probably the exact same as Mitch, because that's just the reels we run. But hey, at the end of the day, if you have a Sienna, it's still going to catch a brim in winter. Line. That's sort of where it gets interesting, like, varies system to system, place to place. Like, say, if we're talking where we fish East Gippsland, Western Vic, really does become a lot more of a plastic bite. Typically, for me, I haven't fished plastics in a long time. I haven't tried much of the newer stuff. I've certainly bought a lot the last few weeks just to try out and get back into it, but it's always been Z-Man Slim 1/20th to a 1/8th. If the fish are in open water, I do like to go lighter because I just do find on those bigger fish it makes a bit of a difference. Sometimes I usually run, say, 2 or 3 rod lengths and 3-pound leader on those rods with a plastic, and that does most of my stuff. Otherwise, it's just rod length and 0.5 liter and a black VX35. I think that's, you don't need to overcomplicate shit in winter at all. But we, if people want, we can certainly do a winter brim podcast on what we like to go into. Let us know if you want to hear that, because it certainly can get a lot more complicated than that. And as we found, people like it when we get more complicated.
And I think going off some of the things that I saw when we fished the BEM competition, which is a really interesting event, which I think we should definitely talk about. It definitely didn't play to my strengths or the things that I wanted to do. But what I did find is there was one lure there that I would love to see and try, especially in a lot of our southwest rivers and those winter fish where they are in that sort of 3 to 3.6 sort of meters of water, the OSP Power Duck. It's obviously probably a larger lure than some people like to fish, but I absolutely smacked a crap load of fish on that at BEM in that deep water, and I was able to get it to about 4 meters of water, which realistically, in terms of diving hard body, not many people are getting lures that far down. So I think that lure in itself is going to provide us with the opportunity to get some really large winter bites. So if I was going to say, if there's any lure out there that someone should experiment with, especially for our black brim that do tend to eat that large bait, OSP Power Ducks. Put that one on the top of your list.
Mm-hmm. But then, like, we've even got some funky stuff coming, like OSP dice rubbers and all of that, which
I think there's questions about that, so leave that one. I think there might be some more. Nice. But, yes, for you, Ben, that's our rods and reels, Miller Rod Grub Freaks, Blade Freaks, $2,500, $2,000 reel, PE 0.6 to 0.8 or 6 to 10 pound, whatever you like.
Yeah.
Anywhere between that 5 and 3 pound litres, vibes and plastics.
They don't have to complicate it in winter. Like, they just behave pretty simple.
If in doubt, put lots of scent on, fish really slow.
Yeah. Procure mullet and S factor, whatever you like.
And if you find a school of fish and they're not eating, go off them, maybe fish the edges, try and find that random fish that's somewhere still stuck on the edge, or find some more fish somewhere else and keep rotating off them until they eat, because eventually they will.
All right, next question. What do we got?
All right, I have one from the man himself, Bowen Joyner. Can you describe the typical characteristics of a log flathead?
Ooh. usually very decent size, in a random place, mottled in colour, log colour to be exact. typically sits exactly where you expect to find Australian bass and has a hankering for jackal squirrels and chatterbaits.
Yeah. Typically a flathead found around hard wooden structures. All right, so Bowen, I hope that answers that question. We had one come in. Well, there's other stuff that Bowen asked, but, we don't necessarily need to answer too many of those. But yes. No,
definitely not.
But yes, swimbait gear is too finesse for brim, Bowen. Sam Dewing asks, have you guys had a chance to check out or fish with the newer Miller Rod production rods yet? Frank Freak, Flats Freak, ETC.
Yes and no. I have had a few casts and fished with the Flats Freak for a bit. Really nice rod. Doesn't even feel like a two-piece. Is it definitely on the heavier side. I really liken it to, it feels like a longer version of a finesse Freak, but way nicer because it's got titanium silicon carbide guides. It's a good thing. I have picked up the Crank Freak? Yeah?
The Crank Freak, the spinning version?
Yeah. In my hands, for me personally, I wouldn't buy that rod. It just felt really soft and noodly. If I always cranked for yellowfin, then I might. I bought, though, one of the Swim Freak RBs, and that has become my absolute favorite bass rod of all time. Gorgeous, gorgeous rod. Does exactly what you want it to do with it, and it doesn't even cost that much, like under $400. to the point I don't pick up rods that are twice the price of that that I have traditionally fished with. So absolutely love that stick. If you're a fan of bling bling rods, it's probably not for you, but if you just want a really nice rod that catches bass and perch on top water and everything else, swim baits, yep, general hard bodies, that rod is a rod you need to put in your arsenal. Love it.
Yep. I thought the same thing. I was picking up yours. I thought it's a lovely rod. I have just gone down the avenue of the dialer things at the moment because I get them for cheaper, and to be fair, they run a mixture of titanium and stainless steel guides, and I do see myself throwing them in some estuary sort of situations. So I figured that perhaps I'll run with that for now, but would I go with the Miller Rod stuff? 310%, which kind of feels weird not to have them. And I think they have a bit nicer, like that, the multi-loading blanks. It just gives that nice bit of, I guess, a bit more of parabolic action to them, which has been really good.
Yeah.
The Blade Freak RB, so the other bait casting rod Miller. I didn't like it. I think it's way too soft for my personal preference. For a lot of the fishing that I do, you're not going to pull hooks, but I'm also getting absolutely bricked on them. So I don't think that's a rod I myself would own. But Dil, give your feedback on that one.
I want it. But I don't want it for like spinnerbaits. I want it for hard bodies. It just feels like a really nice sort of jerk bait rod. I don't think I'd use it for like a big e-skippy bass rod. I think it's just far, far, far too light. But just for an all-round general purpose, if you want to throw something like a Mega Bass Grand Singlet, Jackal Micro Pomp, like TNs, just a general yellow bass perch, trout bait cast, anything along those lines, I think it would just fit the bill nicely. On the note, though, of the newer ones, so like at Ebb Tide HQ in the good old shed there, played around with all the new ones. Pitch Freaks feel really nice. I think if you're looking for like a brutal structured dew snapper barrow rod, definitely check those out. Like, I really like a couple of them, but I just don't do that fishing much anymore, so why would I bother?
No, and especially when we've got the Bass Freak XHs between Dylan and myself now. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of a rod, if you're just wanting to go spin for bass and you want to kind of cast absolutely everything and brim fishing, heavy structure stuff, and especially that option to cast with really light line lures, but cast on some heavier line classes, the Bass Freak XH is the absolute rod that you need. And I'd go so far to say almost the be all and end all rods for that sort of thing, especially if you're wanting to cast a wide variety of things.
From an unweighted plastic to literally, if you had to, you could throw a swim bait or a bigger top water. Like, won't do that perfectly, but for like everything and anything, that's the rod.
I remember I was testing out how well my Bass Freak XH would cast a unweighted paddle grub with Bowen and Dylan when I was at one of Bowen's sheds. And what I did accidentally was cast it an absolute mile onto the roof of another building, and I proceeded to snap my paddle grub off.
You did.
So I can confirm.
Passed onto the neighbour's roof.
That's right. So sorry to the person across from from shed. There's a paddle grub stuck to your roof. But I think Flats Freak for me, I'm definitely going to buy myself a Flats Freak. I had a fish with Nathan Andrews on the weekend when I was fishing Lake Wendouree. And I think for a lure, for a rod that casts bent, you know, plastics, I think they're going to cast crankbait quite well. Now that I've put lines through and actually cast some lures on, I think it is going to be an absolutely invaluable rod. It's going to be awesome in terms of covering distance, and especially if you put that on something with like that lighter line classes, so that 0.6 sort of PE, even down to 0.4, if you really wanted to push those casts out, they're going to be a phenomenal rod. So 200%, I'm putting one of those Flats Freaks in my arsenals. The crank freak rods, I think, do summed up really nicely. I sort of like the feel of them, but I think in terms of what Dylan and I do crankbait-wise, and especially wanting to run those slightly heavier lines, so that 3 to 5 pound that we like to run here in Victoria, putting those over a Blade Freak is really nice. And I think the Blade Freak covers it really nicely. But if you're going to fish those 2 pound leaders, I certainly think
if you're fishing like slightly smaller yellow, like not small yellow fin, but fish more so under that kilo mark, then it's an awesome rod with those ultralights, leaders and lines and straight throughs. Like if you're fishing 2 pounds straight through and that's your jam, like you're going to love that rod. But for us, when we're fishing yellowfin, typically our fish are anywhere from 600 grams to 1.6 plus kilos. And in current with 2 pound, you're just not going to turn too well in most situations. Therefore, we just go, what have we been fishing? A lot of 4 and 5 pound straight through.
Yeah. So what we've been doing the vast majority of has been that 4 and 5 pound straight through. But when we first started doing it, it was 3 pound for me. And honestly, the amount that you can pull and the action you get out of a blade freak, because it's designed for tiny, tiny trebles and blades.
Yeah.
It just has a really nice load and still a huge amount of power down load to pull those fish. So Dylan and I have caught some really solid yellowfin out of the surf. And we've been able to pull really hard on them on 3 pounds straight through. So I think that rod is where it's at, in my opinion.
That's my favorite.
But I can certainly see where the appeal would be for that crank freak, especially if you're fishing, like Dill said, for those smaller fish that might you tend to find up in New South Wales, or fishing those really light leaders, really light straight through lines, that 2 pound class.
For sure. Well, I got to say, I got to run, but thanks everyone for sending in a few questions. I know we didn't get to vast majority, but we plan when I'm back from New South to get a few more episodes out. There's one question there that will be an episode because it is a can of worms.
There's a couple of questions in there that actually should be really good. So to a few people that haven't asked, answered the questions, we'll get back to them hopefully next week or the week after.
Mm-hmm.
And in line with some more comp stuff. So we'll get back to them. Sorry about that. Dill has some things planned, which is totally okay. But Dill, where can people find us?
On the Cast Media, on Instagram and Facebook. Definitely, if you'd want to get in contact with us, get on Facebook, much easier. On the Cast Media at gmail.com. I think that's our email address. We checked it out probably not for a year and a bit, but...
No, I checked it relatively recently, but I kind of forgot exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And if people want to find just you, Dill, where can they find you on social media?
Dillpace, D-Y-L-P-A-C-E, on Instagram. I don't really use Facebook much, definitely not for anything fishing related, so don't hit me up there, hit me up on Instagram.
Absolutely. And if people, I don't know why you would, but if people want to talk to me, you can find me on Instagram at mitch.m.fishing. So, we've banned another podcast, so everyone drive up for Woi Woi for the competition, good luck, safe drives, and if you're listening to the podcast, I feel sorry for you and hope your ears don't bleed.
Exactly. Anyway, Mitch, let's leave it there. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and look forward to talking to you all in another 10 months.